This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Okay, everybody, good evening and welcome to the People Speak Radio Show here on BBS Network. Again, this is your host, Charles Giuliani, and we have a very important, very interesting guest this evening. I interviewed Jim Fetzer quite a few times years ago. I haven't talked with him in quite a few years, so this will be like renewing old times here, a reunion. He's here to talk about something totally different in the past. I've interviewed him about all kinds of different subjects. Mr. Fetzer has written books on the JFK assassination. He's an expert on that subject. He's also an expert on 9/11. He's the founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. But this evening, he's here to talk about something entirely different, the Sandy Hook Massacre, if in fact that's what it was. That's what it's been called. But because there are so many incredibly conflicting facets to this story, one really has to wonder what exactly did go on there, or maybe what didn't go on there. It's not cut and dry like so many people have been led to believe it is. In fact, there isn't really any aspect of the story, as Mr. Fetzer will be sharing with us, that actually stands up to close scrutiny. So with no further ado, let's welcome Mr. Jim Fetzer. Welcome.
Hey, Charles, it's great to be back on the air with you again. A real pleasure.
Yeah, it's been quite a few years. Yeah, let's just leap right into this. I'm sure probably most of our listeners at least, you know, suspect something's wrong with the story. They probably heard one or two problems, but perhaps they're not all aware just how deep this rabbit hole goes. There really isn't any aspect that stands up to close scrutiny to the story, is there?
I think that's exactly right, Charles. From the beginning to the end, we got all these inconsistent reports. Adam Lanza was a student there, then he wasn't. His mother was a teacher there, then she wasn't. He used the Bushmaster, then he didn't. ABC, NBC, CBS all reported and confirmed, stated they had confirmed it with federal and state officials that his body was found with only handguns, actually four handguns, and that the alleged assault rifle, the Bushmaster, had been left in the car. But, of course, if the Bushmaster had been left in the car, then none of these children could have been shot and killed by means of it. And yet,
right,
the medical examiner, this fellow named Carver, in a very bizarre press exchange, claimed that all the kids had only been shot with a rifle, and he didn't even know how many were boys and how many were girls, Charles. How bad is
that? Oh, yeah, I saw that. As a matter of fact, one of the reporters asked him, was it, what gun was used for the killings? It was the same gun for all of them, correct? He says, yeah. Well, what gun was it? He says it was the long gun. And they said, sir, that's not correct. That was in the trunk of the car. Oh, well, they were all over the place. What in the world kind of ridiculous? This is supposed to be authority.
Charles, the whole thing is really quite ridiculous and appears to be a scam. I have now five or six articles about it on Veterans Today, where it turns out, in addition to the key points I've just made, that the Connecticut State Emergency Communication System was revised, completely reworked in the hours immediately before Sandy Hook, including the introduction of a new network that appears to have been the master controller but wasn't identified as that. It's really quite bizarre. And I really regard this as most telling. I mean, if you had a bunch of kids who'd been shot, then you'd expect the arrival of a large number of emergency medical technicians, ambulances, hearses, whatever, rushing in, getting these little kids out, putting them on stretchers, taking them to a medical authority who could determine whether they were dead or alive. That's not something which an ordinary civilian is qualified to do. But we had nothing like that. There wasn't this sense of urgency. There wasn't this massive presence of panicked medical technicians. There wasn't all these ambulances.
And kids running in every direction chaotically in fear.
Yeah, that's what you'd think.
Right.
That's what you expect. And then compounding that is the behavior of a lot of the so-called parents whose actions were more appropriate to those who were feigning to be parents rather than bona fide parents.
Sure.
We even had Anderson Cooper claiming to be interviewing one of the parents, and the woman was very well dressed, and she was flirting with him during the interview. Very inappropriate behavior, considering.
Oh, that would be the McDonald parents, right?
Isn't that bizarre, Charles?
The mother was laughing.
I know, being charming. It was like a cocktail party conversation,
right? This was only 3 days later. This was not a woman who just lost her daughter. There's no way.
I know it. And then you got the whole Robbie Parker family business and their daughter,
sure.
Emily, who's supposed to have been killed, and then shows up wearing the very same dress she's wearing in a family photograph and sitting on Obama's lap. Well, this
right.
little girl
and was
miraculously reincarnated because she's supposed to be dead.
Did you catch, like a week or so later after her funeral, supposedly in Utah, they interviewed her aunt that lives over there in Utah. And she's talking about how this has been hard on all of us, but especially her two older sisters. Two older sisters?
Yeah, she's supposed to be the oldest of the three.
Right. Much taller than them, obviously much older. They have little baby faces.
There should have been two younger sisters, so something's clearly wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there seem to be a number of actors involved in this thing. This guy who lived just, a few doors down, and supposedly a group of these kids wound up on his house. Is a member of the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah. And some obvious CIA ties.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Did we lose you?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I heard a thud. I thought you dropped by accident.
We got this very good fellow, by the way, who's a professor at Florida Atlantic University.
Sure, I heard
My
that,
name
yeah.
is James Tracy.
Right.
Who published a wonderful piece especially about the coroner's press conference, where he's really mostly asking questions about the case and pointing out that there's an awful lot we don't know, which we ought to know if it were all bona fide and on the up and up.
Right.
And Anderson Cooper in particular went after him hammer and tong. I mean, it was unbelievable. Anderson Cooper was just begging the question by assuming he knew what in fact had happened, when indeed there were so many reasons to acknowledge that we did not know what had happened, that it appeared to be a kind of a mini vendetta intended to, slander or smear James Tracy. When I know the guy. I'd actually invited him earlier in the year to speak at a conference I organized for Vancouver, British Columbia, in June, entitled The Vancouver Hearings, all about 9/11. He does courses on the media. He has a course on our culture of conspiracy. He's involved in journalistic ethics. The guy's a perfect guy to be studying this. He has a very mild, even balanced temperament. He's extremely lucid. He writes very well, Charles. And the idea that this Anderson Cooper was going after him, I thought was perfectly absurd. So I actually have published an open letter for the Florida Atlantic University faculty, staff, and administration about Sandy Hook that is my most recent article on Veterans Today. So if anyone were to go to Veterans Today now, they'd find that was my most recent article. And I just point out how not only is there so much uncertainty about what actually happened, and there's so many disturbing aspects. I mean, Charles, that even includes, we got real-time police radio where the officer's reporting that two perps are running right at him, and he's quite startled, and one of them is subdued, and another takes off. We then have police helicopter footage tracking one of these people off into the woods. They're apprehended, but they're never booked. We don't even know their names. I mean, the idea that cover-up is going on here is blatant and obvious.
Well,
I mean,
did you catch the guy in the camouflage pants? And he was only one of at least three that I know of. There were two other individuals with guns. You have in the live police transmission, a cop is saying, "There's two more. They're shooting. They're coming at me." You never hear any more
exactly.
about them.
Yeah.
But one of them was named as Chris Rodriguez, I'm sure you know. And it turns out they actually read the license plate number off his car at the time, live on, you know, on the day of the shooting.
Yeah.
And the license plate number that they read, that they said was identified as his car, is the same car they later showed on the flatbed truck claiming it's Lanz's mother's car. That license plate number is the exact same one that they said belonged to Chris Rodea.
Charles, you've been keeping right on top of this. Yeah, absolutely. Every American should know as much as what you're describing. I mean, it's really outrageous. And the whole thing,
astonishing.
You know,
yeah.
it appears to be part of an escalating series of staged events that are intended to induce hysteria into the American people to promote a gun control agenda that would deprive us of our rights under the Second Amendment, Charles. It's really incredible.
And, of course, as I'm sure you know, you go back and you look at other similar shootings that have been occurring for years on end now. Columbine, you know, the Gabby Giffords shooting. And I like how they call it Gabby Giffords, because they don't even mention, she wasn't even killed. We've got Judge Roll that was killed. Why do they call it the Giffords shooting, you know, as though he didn't matter? But anyway, you got your Aurora shooting, you know, all of these, the Columbine, they all, oh, and of course, Virginia Tech, they all have this classic same type of arrangement where you have more than one shooter. The cops get there long after the time they should have gotten there, you know, long after the damage is done. Sometimes hours have gone by. You always have inconsistencies, major contradictions. You know, documents pertaining to the case being sealed. Columbine, the judge sealed them for 20 years. And always these things are followed by major pushes for gun control legislation.
Well, it's pretty bizarre until you put it into this broader framework because, I mean, most Americans just don't know, but we not only have all these FEMA camps, 300 or 400 FEMA camps distributed around the country and special railway cars to transport detainees to those facilities, but Homeland Security has acquired something near 2 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammunition, Charles, which isn't even permissible for use in combat under the Hague Convention of 1899. And, of course, Homeland Security has no foreign obligation, so evidently that fantastic quantity of ammunition is intended for domestic consumption. Plus, it turns out that there's a subcommittee of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Intelligence that conducted a study of fusion center reports, where fusion centers merge federal, state, and local anti-terrorism efforts. From 2009 into 2010, 680, Charles. And in studying this vast number of reports, they found zero indication of terrorist activity. Not one terrorist event was covered or found in those 680 reports.
So what does that tell you?
It tells you there is no domestic terrorist threat, and I believe, therefore, that these shootings have been provoked and arranged in order to provide a substitution so that there'd be a pseudo-justification for this massive campaign to deprive us of our rights under the law, where Dianne Feinstein has, you know, introduced an absolutely draconian bill that would virtually confiscate every semi-automatic weapon. And most of the public doesn't know. Most handguns and rifles are semi-automatic, meaning each time you pull the trigger, it automatically reloads. It rotates the chamber or, you know, chambers, ejects an old shell casing and loads a new one for a so-called automatic, which is actually a semi-automatic, as opposed to true automatic weapons where they continuously fire as long as you have the trigger depressed.
Yeah.
And the fact is that assault weapons that are automatic actually were banned, I don't know, 10 or 12 years back, and they're not even on the table now. So this whole thing is a charade. It's phony. And it doesn't appear that any of these kids, if any of them, were actually killed, and it's very much open to doubt whether any of them were, that if they were killed, they were killed using one of the kinds of weapons that would be up for being banned.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, as I'm sure you know, a lot of these funerals turned out to be closed caskets, so how the hell do we know what's in the caskets? Then there was the problem of, you know, why the bodies were kept in the building. They weren't removed. This is unheard of in crime scene history, where there's dead bodies. They, they can't wait to get them out of there because they're going to start decomposing and stinking up the place. All you do, as they always have ever done, is photograph them in place, put a white chalk line around them, and you haul them out.
But absolutely.
Yeah, parents were told, as I'm sure you know, that they were going to be keeping them there till Sunday, 2 days later. Absolutely ridiculous, totally unjustifiable. But, of course, Jim, that's not what happened, is it? They took them out late, supposedly.
No, in the dead of night. They took them out in the dead of night when there was no one there to even witness what was taking place.
Exactly.
I mean, this whole thing just stinks to high heaven, Charles. It's about the most ridiculous case of a fabricated event that I think we've ever seen. And because of the Internet, in part, I think we have been on top of it. It even turns out that according to the Social Security Death Index, Adam Lanza died on the 13th when the shooting took place on the 14th.
The day before, yep.
How do you account for that?
And how did you screw up? They told us immediately after what was announced that, the father was dead. He was shot in Hoboken. And then, Adam, and then they were saying it was the brother that did it. How do you get something so horribly wrong in the first place and then retract it they're just making it up as they go along?
I think that's right. And it's so in your face, it's like they could care less what we do or don't believe. They're going to control the source of information and they're going to dictate. You even had one of the state troopers say that he was going to prosecute anyone who challenged the official account.
Oh, Vance. Yeah, Fancy Pants Vance, I call him. Yeah, that was a classic statement, wasn't
Charles, it? Charles, isn't that about as bizarre as it gets?
Yeah. The voices you should be listening to are the ones that come over these microphones. And I want the alternative media out there on the Internet to know that if you continue to spread false information, we're going to prosecute you to the fullest extent of the law. Oh, yeah, he's upholding the Constitution, isn't he?
Well, how do we know which information is true and which is false?
Right, exactly. They kept changing it themselves, even if you do listen to what came over their microphones. It's bizarre. Oh, I tell you.
Yeah, another philosopher, Jerry Massey, observed that Americans tend to confound authority, to mistake authority for truth, when in fact it's truth that should be our authority.
Right, yeah.
But, his attitude reminds me of these laws in Germany against Holocaust denial. I mean, the idea of being, being against the law to inquire into or question any historical event is simply absurd, Charles. I mean, after all, if the Holocaust actually took place, as we have been told, then research is going to substantiate that. And if it doesn't, then surely we're all entitled to know. In fact, I've just returned from an international conference on Hollywoodism in Tehran, which was focusing on the role of the Hollywood community, which is completely dominated by individuals who are Jewish and who seem to have a very strong affinity for advancing the interests of Israel.
And
where it becomes more and more obvious, Charles, how much propaganda we're being subjected to around the clock culturally, not only on television, but through the movies.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. It is this predominantly Jewish influence that is the source of much of the propaganda we're being fed. And, here we are. We're getting lied into war after war, which was what 9/11 was all about.
Yeah.
Against countries that are not our enemies. They're enemies of Israel. And you know something, you can go to their own sources. The two top papers in Israel, Haaretz and Jerusalem Post, they have admitted that the whole reason we got into Iraq was for Israel, not for the United States.
Yes. Well, in fact, the Israeli role in 9/11 is quite extensive. I mean, I have quite a few articles about both 9/11, JFK, and other issues on Veterans Today. And one of the important ones is entitled 9/11 in Zion, What Was Israel's Role?
Right.
By Nick Hollerston, who is an historian of science from the UK, and who actually lost his job because he did some scientific research on the use of Zyklon B in the alleged gas chambers and found that they would have left a characteristic stain on the walls. And when you study the walls, it doesn't have that characteristic stain.
A blue
and
film.
Actually,
yeah.
And actually, when you get into the more detailed history here, late in the war, the Allies had bombed all these German cities and the railroad lines and all that, and it was increasingly difficult to even maintain a food supply to these camps where they did have large numbers of prisoners, but that they were undergoing starvation. It wasn't the deliberate policy. It was unavoidable because of what the Allies themselves had done, and where this Zyklon B was used as a disinfectant to try to keep down dysentery and other diseases.
And lice and whatnot, yeah. Right?
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, I'm becoming increasingly disillusioned about the whole Holocaust thing.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I've really come to the conclusion over the years, Jim, that there isn't very much that we're not lied to about in this world. Precious little that we have been told from the time we were out of the cradle stands up to close scrutiny.
Well, you know, some of the films we talked about included Argo, for example, which is about the Iranian hostage crisis. And again, in 1979, where they took, you know, the American embassy personnel prisoners. And the film that has been produced, you know, that stars Ben Affleck, that George Clooney has been promoting and all that, gives a very demonistic portrayal of the Iranians and happens to exclude the role of Bill Casey, who was Ronald Reagan's campaign manager, who negotiated with the Iranians to keep the prisoners until after the inauguration because he feared if they were released early that Jimmy Carter would have a re-election victory, and that Casey was rewarded by Reagan for this, you know, managing this piece of
CIA director.
Theater. Yeah, and as director, he told the members of his staff that our disinformation program will be a success when everything Americans believe is false.
Yeah, he actually said that.
He actually said that.
Where else do you put somebody like that but in charge of the CIA?
I know. Another piece of political theater is this the Zero Dark 30 film about the raid on the compound in Pakistan, where I have published about this. You can find an article of mine online entitled Zero Dark 30, The Deeper, Darker Truths. Because Osama bin Laden actually died on 15 December 2001, probably from kidney disease, of which he suffered. You know, it's tough to get those dialysis machines in and out of those caves in Afghanistan.
Some people, you talk like this, of course, most people, unfortunately, and they'll look at you like you've got antennas on your head. But the truth is, if they were paying attention like they should be, they would be able to see that these stories don't add up. The bin Laden that existed prior to 9/11 had a long, thin, slender nose. The bin Laden that started allegedly releasing tapes in late 2001, late in December, after he had been reported dead by, for crying out loud, CNN reported that, Fox reported that. Suddenly they ignore those reports, act like they never said he died, and now they're releasing tapes that they said were just recently made by him. This bin Laden has a short, stubby nose, and he's gesturing with his right hand instead of his left hand. He was left-handed.
Charles, you're right on top of this. I love it. Nick Kullerstrom has even published an article entitled Osama bin Laden 1957-2001, where we show some of the photographs and how different the, you know, real bin Laden was from the later fake one. I published press releases for scholars about some of these phony audio and videotapes and citing the work of the leading expert on bin Laden in the world by the name of Bruce Lawrence from Duke. And he was confirming that this was not bin Laden. It wasn't his style. It wasn't his manner of speech and all that.
Sure. His own mother said it wasn't him.
David Ray Griffin has a whole book about it entitled Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive, that brings together the massive evidence. And then, you know, having this raid at the time it occurred was so politically convenient for Obama because his phony birth certificate had made the front page. He was being criticized for still having Guantanamo open and for having troops in Pakistan. So, Charles, they claim the tip came from Guantanamo. So, gee, that must be good that we still have it. He uses troops in Pakistan. Oh, aren't we glad that they were stationed there? And it wipes the story of his phony birth certificate right off the front page and sets him up for re-election. And yet, you know, residents in that community said they'd never seen Osama bin Laden there. And the photograph of the guy holding the channel clicker was actually the owner of the compound and wasn't Osama bin Laden at all.
Right, right. Oh, the thing. And so, you know, you got to wonder, okay, so what did happen going on almost, what, 2 years now when they allegedly captured him? I mean, how people can buy this? This guy was supposedly the most wanted terrorist in the world. And when they catch him, what do? They shoot him and throw him overboard? Absolutely unheard of, violates all standard procedures anyway. But
that's right. And then they claimed that
high
was
profile.
They claimed it was in accordance with Muslim tradition, Charles.
Yeah, right.
How ridiculous. I mean, that's disrespectful of the body. The sharks, crustaceans,
sure.
Fish can nibble away at it. That's not a Muslim tradition. He was buried in an unmarked grave. That was in accordance with Muslim tradition.
Right, right.
And then you remember the photograph? Of the, you know, Obama and Biden and Hillary looking at this big screen TV, which was promoted as them watching this go down in real time, until
right.
Leon Panetta, the director of the CIA, explained that there had been no live coverage for the first 20 or 25 minutes, which was more than the lapse time for the whole operation. I mean, what a fraud.
It's unbelievable. You know, they don't even care about fact-checking or, you know, getting this story consistent. They're so confident in themselves that people are going to buy their baloney. And unfortunately, it looks like they're correct in their estimation because people do buy it, Jim. That's what's so scary.
Well, the American people seem to be so gullible, Charles. And, you know, I think when you control the news and all the news is doing is publishing press releases from the government as though they were, you know, verified, factual, and had been established by independent journalism.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole idea of investigative journalism has gone by the board. Most newspapers don't have anyone doing any investigative journalism anymore.
Right. Maybe off a script sheet. I'll never forget when Dan Rather, he won some respect points with me. Of course, as you know, he played a big role in covering up the JFK assassination, lying about the Zapruder film. No one had seen it yet. And he said, oh, I saw it, and it clearly shows Kennedy responding to a shot from behind, and of course it's the other way around. He falls
forward. Charles, that's really an interesting case because, as you know, I put together a research group consisting of the most highly qualified individuals to ever study the case in 1992, including a world authority on the human brain who is also an expert on wound ballistics, a PhD in physics, who is also an MD and board certified in radiation oncology, which is the treatment of cancer using x-ray therapy. So he's an expert on the interpretation of x-rays. A physician who was there in Parkland when JFK was brought into trauma room one was responsible for the treatment of his alleged assassin, Lee Oswald, in trauma room two. A legendary photo and film analyst, another PhD in physics, this time with an expertise in electromagnetism, the properties of light and of images of moving objects. We have been able to establish on multiple grounds that that film, the whole movies, were completely reworked, that the driver, William Greer, had brought the limousine to a halt in Dealey Plaza after bullets began to be fired. And get this, Charles, he was hit twice in the head during that interval of time, which I estimate may have been 4 to 6 seconds. He was hit in the back of the head, and he fell forward, just as Jan Rather described. Then Jackie eased him back up and was looking him right in the face when he was hit in the right temple by a frangible or exploding bullet. It blew his brains out the back of his weakened cranium to the left rear with so much force that when motorcycle officer Bobby Hargis riding there was hit with the debris, he thought he himself had been shot. Plus, we know that during this interval, Officer James Cheney on the right side motored forward to the lead car to tell Chief of Police Jesse Curry that the president had been shot. His explanation of what he did was confirmed by Chief Curry and by Winston Lawson and Forrest Sorrells, two key Secret Service guys who were in that lead car, and by Bobby Hargis, too. Plus, Clint Hill, who rushes forward, not only gets on the back of the limo, he pushes Jackie down, he lays across their bodies in the back seat, he peers down in this gaping fist-sized hole at the back of JFK's head, turns to his colleagues and gives them a thumbs down all before the limousine reaches the triple underpass. None of that is seen in the extant film, Charles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure you
read the detail,
right?
Dan Rather was reporting what he actually saw because he was witnessing the original film before the exchange was made. In fact, he saw that on Saturday morning. A copy of the film was taken to the National Photographic Interpretation Center in Washington, D.C. on the 23rd. It was an 8mm already split film that had been developed in Dallas. They actually had to go out and buy an 8mm projector in order to view it because they didn't have one. The next day, however, a 16mm unsplit film was brought from Rochester, New York. And a substitution was made. So one came in on Saturday and was dealt with by one team of staff at the NPIC. Then another team was in place on Sunday and dealt with the second film. And that's when the substitution was made. So Dan Rather took an undeserved hit, but for reasons that the American public couldn't begin to appreciate until we discovered how massively they'd altered the film. I mean, there are more than 15.
I tell you what, this is some really great stuff we're on to here, and I certainly want to continue with this when we get back. In fact, I want to tell a quick story of why I even brought Dan Rather up in the first place, something interesting he said a few years ago. But before we get to that, we got to cut to a short break. So stick with us, folks. We'll be right back with Dr. James Fetzer.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests from various realms of interest share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And like millions of other responsible Americans, I smoke pot. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. And it's none of the government's business. Let's get the government out of our private lives once and for all and stop arresting smokers. Let's take a stand for personal freedom. To learn how you can help, go to normal.org.
Come, you masters of war.
Hello, this is Cindy Sheehan. America's war on terror has become a war of terror, with endless drone bombings, continuing military occupation, as well as detention, rendition, and torture still being practiced under the current administration. I lost my precious son Casey to war, and now work towards a day when not one more mother, son, or daughter will suffer such a loss. Listen to my podcast, read my blog, and come join me at any activities I attend near you. Please visit CindySheehanSoapbox.com for more information, and let's work for peace together.
Stellar Flutes is a family-owned and operated business dedicated to producing beautiful, finely handcrafted Native American-style flutes in a variety of sustainable woods. Stellar Flutes are used by both beginner and professional musicians with glowing praise. Easy to play and invoking a calm, meditative feeling, they make a perfect gift for you or someone special. For more information, including videos on selecting and playing the flute, please visit stellarflutes.com or call toll-free 1-888-427-8850.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. Once again, our guest is Dr. Jim Fetzer, founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. For those that were with us in the first half hour, you can see Dr. Fetzer is a wealth of information on a number of different topics. And I knew this would happen, getting you on, Jim, that we'd be all over the map, but that's great. It's all connected. It's all connected.
Well, there's a common underlying theme, namely how the government lies to the people to promote its own political agenda, and where you have to be able to read between the lines and figure out what's really going on, Charles.
Sure.
So yeah. With the Zapruder film, see, there were more than 15 indications of Secret Service complicity in setting him up for the hit. They left two agents behind at Love Field. These were the two who would have been running along beside the car, riding on the back. They were left behind. all the vehicles were put in the wrong order. JFK was put out in front. He should have been in the middle. They canceled the flatbed truck that should have carried all the camera crew right in front of the presidential limo. They cut down the motorcycle escort to four and instructed them not to ride ahead of the rear wheels because, of course, they didn't want any interference with the shots that were going to take place. They let the crowd spill out into the street 8, 10, 12 deep. They didn't even cover the open windows. They didn't weld the manhole covers shut. They took an improper route. They actually changed the route about 4 days before, which the Secret Service normally never does because they have to inspect all the buildings and certify all the personnel are going to be in those buildings, but none of that was done on this occasion. Yeah. And then they took a 110-degree turn off of Houston onto Elm in order to slow the limousine down without alarming the occupants, and it was shortly after that that Greer, the driver, pulled the limousine to the left and to a halt to make sure JFK would be killed.
Oh, sure. You can see him looking back at him to make sure that it is, in fact, a deadly shot. Okay, now we can speed up. Slowing down. Oh, geez.
Well, you're right. You're right. He lied about it to the Warren Commission. I mean, in relation to what we see in the film, because he claimed that he hit the accelerator after the second shot, but obviously he did not do that. In fact, it turns out there was shooters at six different locations, Charles. I mean, it's unbelievable. JFK himself was hit four different times. He was hit in the back by a shot fired from the top of the county record building. Hit him about 5.5 inches down below the collar, just to the right of the spinal column, a shallow shot. Only went in about as far as the second knuckle on your little finger. A Dallas deputy sheriff appears to have fired that shot. Then there were three shots fired from the Dell Tex. There was a second or third floor window. It's kind of framed by the fire escape there that was actually to the broom closet of a uranium mining operation. It was a CIA asset for an anti-Castro Cuban using what I believe was the only unsilenced weapon. The Mannlicher Carcano fired three shots with two misses. One missed and injured the distant bystander James Tague. Another missed and hit the chrome strip over the windshield. The third hit JFK in the back of the head during that stop, which was a shot almost on the horizontal, which shows how unreliable is that Mannlicher Carcano. Then there was a shot from the top of it, from the sixth floor or fifth of the book depository, but the west side, not the east, where the alleged assassin's lair was located. Actually, no shots were fired from there. But one, two, or three shots were fired at John Connally in the mistaken belief that it was Ralph Yarborough. Lyndon had a huge argument with JFK that morning, trying to get Yarborough in and Connally out of the limousine, knowing what was going to take place, where Connally and Lyndon, of course, were very tight. He'd even been his campaign manager when he ran for president against JFK. Oh, yeah. That was a CIA guy who fired those shots in the mistaken belief that it was Yarborough. Jack overrode Lyndon on the ground that the chief executive of the state should ride with the chief executive of the United States. Then there was a police officer, a Dallas cop, who also worked for the CIA, who fired one of the closest shots, but missed. I think he pulled it because he was going to hit Jackie. They were under very strict instructions that she should not be harmed. Right. And then that shot that hit him in the right temple appears to have been fired by an Air Force expert from an above-ground sewer opening on the right-hand side, the north side of the Triple Underpass, where there was a symmetrical sewer opening on the left side, on the south side, Charles, from which the second hit to JFK was fired, which actually passed through the windshield and hit him in the throat.
Yeah,
which appears to have been fired by Lyndon's personal hitman, who actually killed at least a dozen persons for LBJ, including one of his own sisters.
And so to bring this into a modern context, when you look at this event, the JFK hit, I think most Americans by now, in fact, there was a poll on the 40th anniversary of Kennedy's assassination. It was a Zogby poll. And they asked a few think that, the government was involved. Maybe not that they did it, but do you at least think the government was involved in the JFK assassination, at least in the sense of covering it up? 92% said yes. So most people know that thing was a fraud. We were lied to. So when you realize that high profile people in the military and police, local police officers were involved, Secret Service across the board, of course they were.
Yeah.
Well, translate that over to Sandy Hook now. You've got Officer Vance. We already saw what a monster he is. He doesn't care about the Constitution. This is how scary our world is today, Jim. We do have police totally in bed with this system that go along, that either look the other way or actually willingly and actively participate in cover-ups and scams like
that. You're absolutely right. And of course, as you know, I have my own radio show too, and get access to a lot of stories that I don't expect. And one was from the mother of a B-1 bomber pilot in Iraq who actually told me her son had taken out Saddam Hussein, his two sons, and about 60 members of the general staff just 3 weeks into the invasion. Saddam was using these Jaguar cell phones that were specially made in the UK, but which the U.S. was tracking. So we intercept their messages. We could tell the coordinates where he was located.
Yeah.
And this fellow, whose name was Chris Wachter, was sent the coordinates, told that this was the big one. He shouldn't miss. He dropped two JDAM 500-pound bombs there and leveled the restaurant and killed them all. Even Dick Cheney would subsequently say that Saddam's lifeless body had been dragged from the rubble, and he presumed he was dead. When he got back to the base, he was lionized, put on CNN. He was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross. Subsequently, he'd be feted in the Crystal Cathedral by the Reverend Robert Schiller.
Schiller.
And you know what happened on the 7th of April? So it was when he took out Saddam that they arranged to do the mission accomplished event on the USS Lincoln off of San Diego, Charles.
Yeah.
But someone had to realize that three presidents, Reagan, Carter, and Ford, had all signed executive orders against the assassination of foreign leaders.
Right.
So if they announced what had happened, then W would have been up for a lot of criticism and even violation of the law. So they had to bury it. They brought Chris Wachter back to Langley, told him they admired his flying skills, but that officially Saddam had got away. It was one of his doubles that was hauled out of that spider hole, according to the mythology. When the Red Cross finally arranged for his wife to visit him, she came out screaming, "Oh, this is not my husband. This is not my husband. What have you done with my husband?" And, you know, he participated in the trial and may or may not have actually been hung. But I think, you know, they may have promised him they weren't going to hang him. There'd be a little stoop there, so it looked like he was being hung. But
right.
What more convenient way to get rid of this guy who was standing in front of the deck?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's quite the scam. They get all the bases covered. It's a game that, unfortunately, at least right now, because of the apathy of the American public, it's a game they can't lose.
Well, I'm afraid that's true. I published about this in numerous places, and easy access for your audience would be 9/11, Have We Been Bamboozled?, where I talk about the phony story of the collapse of the Twin Towers, because those buildings aren't collapsing. They're blowing apart in every direction from the top down. All the floors are remaining stationary in place. The buildings are being converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust, and when it's over, right, there's no stack of pancakes or debris. In fact, they were destroyed below ground level. Then the story about the first death of Saddam Hussein, then the story about the second death of Osama bin Laden, and then I close with the faking of the crash at the Pentagon,
yeah,
where even the Pentagon's own photograph, they've only ever revealed one photograph, one frame, even though there are as many as 82 videotapes that should have shown us exactly what happened. They only revealed one frame that showed something they called the plane, and when I had Jack White, the legendary photo and film analyst, size the image of a 757 to the tail, it turned out to be more than twice as large as the image seen just above the gate mechanism in this one frame, which means that the
right,
government's own evidence contradicts the government's own account.
And then, of course, it took them, several months. It wasn't until January of 2002 before they finally released what was only five frames of one camera that they said to. And then years later, in April of 2006, then all of a sudden, oh, there was another camera that caught it. But the key frame in that video is overexposed. It's a yellow color. That's the only frame that should have showed the plane. It's not visible because of this overexposure. How convenient.
Well, there's so many proofs that this is all a fraud, you know. In fact, Charles, your audience will be astonished to learn this. It turns out that flights 11 North Tower and 77 Pentagon weren't even scheduled that day.
Right.
Plus, I have FAA registration data that shows the planes corresponding to Flight 93, Shanksville, and 175, the South Tower, were not deregistered or formally taken out of service until 28 September 2005.
Yeah.
So how could planes that weren't even in the air have crashed on 9/11? And how could planes that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later? Plus, Charles, pilots for 9/11 Truth have done brilliant work by studying air-ground communication and discovered that Flight 93 was in the air that day, but that it was over Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, after it had allegedly crashed in Shanksville. And that Flight 175 was also in the air, but that it was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, long after it had allegedly hit the South Tower, which means all four of those crash sites were fabricated or fake, Charles. It means none of those planes crashed, which means none of the passengers that allegedly died in those plane crashes actually died in those crashes, because those crashes did not occur. And it means there weren't any hijackers. It means the whole thing's a fraud.
And another impossible scenario, of course, is what we were told about Flight 77. Here's a plane that was known to be hijacked moments after it took off, like all the others. But this plane had turned around. It was heading toward Washington. And for the next 40 minutes, the capital of the most powerful nation in the world, the most sophisticated high-tech military equipment guarding Washington, and yet that plane was left unmolested for 40 minutes as it flew to Washington, while known to be hijacked. I mean, you know, if you go by the official story.
Right.
What happened?
The official story is incoherent. In fact, the official story has that plane approaching the Pentagon at a very low altitude at over 500 miles an hour, hitting these lampposts. That's not even aerodynamically or physically possible. A 757 at 500 miles an hour couldn't get closer than 60 or even 80 feet to the ground. 80 feet is actually higher than the Pentagon is tall because of what's known as ground effect, or the accumulation of a pocket of compressed gas, in this case air, which would keep it that much higher above the ground. Second, hitting a stationary lamppost at 500 miles an hour has the same effect as a stationary plane being hit by a lamppost traveling 500 miles an hour. It would have ripped off the wing. The fuel stored in the wing would have burst into flame. It would have pivoted. The tail would have broken off. It would have cartwheeled into the ground. None of that happened, Charles. The whole thing is an absurdity.
Gas, Jim. This whole story is a bunch of compressed gas. Anyway, we're really running out of time. There's so many things I want to talk about. I just wanted to mention quick the reason why I brought Dan Rather up. I don't know if you caught this, but in May of 2002, 7 months after the war in Afghanistan had begun, Dan Rather was starting to, I don't know if he was turning over a new leaf, but, you know, maybe he's getting older in life and he's looking back and regretting some of the games he played with us. Nevertheless, he did make a very interesting statement on the BBC. He was being interviewed and he said, I'm ashamed to admit this. He says, I can't exempt myself from my own criticism. But in the media in the United States today, there is a pervasive fear that if you don't, you know, do what you're told, they're going to rubber tire you, you know, speaking metaphorically, And he said, the real job of the media today in the United States is to protect the backsides of those in power. And he did admit he wasn't exempting himself from his own criticism. In other words, he admitted he's been playing this game too.
Well, what he was telling you was, he was forced to do that, essentially, threatened with the loss of his job.
Yeah.
Dan Rather actually was the victim of a very clever sting arranged by Karen Hughes and Karl Rove in relation to W's fitness reports when he was with the Air National Guard. Because Dan Rather had verified the content of that fitness report with both the commanding officer who had dictated it and the secretary who had typed it. And what Karen and Carl had done was to have it retyped on a newer font face so they could claim, and they did this almost immediately when Dan Rather broke the story, that it was on a fake document, and therefore, you know, the inference was drawn that if it was on a fake document, then its contents must be false. It was very clever, but they'd all arranged it. I mean, Dan Rather had done his homework. He had verified it word by word with both the CO and the secretary.
Right. I tell you what, literally, down the last few minutes here, so much ground to cover. But again, Jim, it's a pleasure to have you on. We'll have to have you on again and cover some more of this material in more detail. We do have a few questions that I have coming in here via text. I'm going to try to get to as many as I can before the end of the show. This first one comes from Mike in California, and he asks, does Dr. Fetzer have any thoughts on the recent capture and killing of ex-LAPD Christopher Dorner.
Yeah, it doesn't look right to me at all. Dorner, from all I can tell, was a good guy, and he may have had a legitimate complaint, but I doubt very much that he committed the crimes attributed to him. It looks to me like a setup. And the fact that they set the cabin on fire and wouldn't let him come out, which he apparently was attempting to do, is an indication that this was a savage manhunt. Yeah, they were going to kill him regardless. The LAPD has a very unsavory reputation, by the way, and was very much involved in covering up the assassination of Bobby Kennedy. In fact, when the coroner, Thomas Noguchi, who was world famous, concluded that Bobby had been shot three or four times from behind and that the fatal shot had been fired from an inch and a half behind his right ear, where Sirhan hadn't got anywhere closer than 3 feet to Bobby and all his shots had been fired from in front. Because the coroner's report contradicted the police report, they fired the coroner. This is incredible. It was the police that were corrupt, not the coroner. In fact, the police even dismantled the whole pantry, Charles, and get this, on the ground, they destroyed the whole pantry after dismantling it on the grounds that it wouldn't fit into a 3x5 card pile.
Oh, jeez. Oh, that's incredible. Let's see if we can get a few more in here. Aaron in Illinois asks, does Professor Fetzer think that Osama bin Laden was captured? Well, we kind of covered this.
Osama even said that he had nothing to do with 9/11, that it's contrary to the tenets of the Quran, murder innocent women and children. He said there was a government within the government that was attempting to blame this on Muslims. And strikingly enough, Bill Clinton said the same thing. He said there was a government within the government and that he did not control it. And even our own FBI has acknowledged that it had no hard evidence that Osama was connected to 9/11.
Yeah, and that's why they never listed 9/11 on their own webpage dedicated to him with all the crimes he was wanted for. They didn't list 9/11 as one of the crimes.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I guess we have time maybe for one more here. We've got this comes from George in Pennsylvania. He asks, what does Professor Fetzer think of the theories postulated by Special Activities contract pilot Philip Marshall?
I'm not sure what Marshall has suggested, but you know, almost anything would not surprise me, so I'd be intrigued. You mentioned the BBC, by the way. They came out and interviewed me for 8 hours at my home near Madison, Wisconsin, for their first Conspiracy Files documentary on 9/11. Then they used 7.5 minutes of me, 4 hours of 4 minutes of Alex Jones, and 3.5 of Dylan Avery. And the other 45 minutes were dedicated to why anyone would believe these kooky things.
Yeah.
Then a couple of years later, they wanted to do it again, and I was contacted by the producer who asked me, you know, if I'd be willing to be interviewed again. And I told him I would, but I'd like it if they did it right this time because there was so much to expose. Sure. They interviewed me for 4 hours, and then they switched photographs. So I was talking about the clear, green, unblemished lawn, and they'd show photographs of the debris. So I blew the case open with an article on Veterans Today entitled "The BBC's Instrument of 9/11. Misinformation." Anyone who wants to know more about the collusion between the media and the government, the intel agencies, should read that article.
Very interesting. Yeah, like you said, you really got to keep an open mind and be open to the possibility that, you know, things that you have been told and held dear from the time you were young might not be true, because upon close inspection, Jim, that's what you're going to find almost every time, isn't it?
Well, I'm afraid we're discovering that in any of these complex, controversial cases, virtually everything we're told by the government turns out to be false. That's true of 9/11, it's true of JFK, and certainly what we've heard about Sandy Hook is another illustration.
That's why once you step back and look at the big picture, you know, for those that, you know, think this sounds crazy, oh, come on, Sandy Hook, everybody saw that on TV, it was a tragedy, how can you discredit the memory of these people. You know, they did that with 9/11 too. All these people who died on 9/11, you're questioning it. You're trashing these poor families and what they've had to suffer. And no, who's doing the real trashing here? The ones that concocted this scam?
Oh, I know.
Well, the ones who are trying to expose it for what it is.
And as I say, if anyone wants to learn more about Sandy Hook, go to VeteransToday, Jim Fetzer, and look at, you know, four or five of my most recent articles are all about Sandy Hook, and a particularly good one is entitled The Nexus of Tyranny, The Strategy Behind Tucson, Aurora, and Sandy Hook.
And, of course, you want to mention the website for Scholars for 9/11 Truth?
9/11scholars.org. But my most recent articles on 9/11 actually are on Veterans Today.
Excellent.
So I'd say that's the place to go.
Excellent. And, you know, I just wanted to finish the point. Anybody who thinks that this Sandy Hook thing sounds crazy, you know, step back, look at some of the incidents that we've been discussing here tonight, see what a fraud they are, and then come back, and you're going to be able to see, you'll be wide open, at least to the possibility that maybe this is a lie too, because everything else has been a lie. Why should Sandy Hook be any different? And it's not. Upon close inspection, you'll see the same classic lies and cover-ups. And were you going to say something, Jim?
Yeah, the irony, Charles, is this whole gun grab seems to have backfired because, in fact, the guns have been flying off the shelves since Dianne Feinstein introduced her proposal. And I think there are probably 10 or 20 million more armed Americans now because of it.
Right, absolutely. Anyway, it looks like we have, in fact, run out of time. Jim, I want to thank you, and we'll definitely get you on again. So much to talk about.
My great pleasure, Charles. Anytime.
You bet. Okay, take care, my friend. Folks, that's it for this week. Join us next week. We're going to have Richard Falk on. He's a UN human rights representative of Palestine. So that should be very interesting to get his perspective, firsthand perspective, on the ever-unfolding horrors over there, what the Palestinians are facing on a daily basis at the hands of the Israelis, even though they would have you believe the opposite. That the Israelis are suffering at the hands of Palestinians. That's just simply not what's going on. So join us next week for that. And in the meantime, have a great week, folks. We'll catch you then. Take care.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office of summer people. And they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.